Okay, so we're moving towards a very auspicious occasion of the appearance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Ramachandra. So the request was to center the discussion on that topic. And so we chose one particular pastime which is very instructive.
So, in the narration about the activities of the Lord in His appearance as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Ramchandra, one of the outstanding principles in that narration is that there are so many strong, powerful spiritual messages, both practical, moral, and spiritual messages, that we can learn from this particular narration, which means these things can be applied in our own practice of Krishna consciousness to uplift our consciousness to a higher state of realization. And one particular pastime is quite outstanding. It's one of the pastimes by which many of the commentaries or commentators on the Ramayana have mentioned that there's some criticism that's centered around Lord Ramachandra's activities. Although he is the Supreme Lord, and although his activities are always beneficial and pure, of course, many times people don't understand. And to understand the Supreme Lord is actually the principle of knowledge, to try to understand the Lord more and more, but no one can understand the Lord completely. But we get some insight of why he does what he does and how he relates to his devotees, how he relates to the material energy. So one particular pastime in that, for those of you who are familiar with the Ramayana, but those of you who are not so much familiar, it centers around that when the Lord came, he had a mission, and that was to bring about Dharma in the world. Of course, yada yada dharma sya jnanir bhavati bharata. Bhagavad Gita explains one of the reasons why the Lord appears is to reestablish real religious principles, destroy what we say sub-religious principles, or those religious principles that are taken as religious principles but are not, and at the same time destroy irreligion also. And he's teaching, especially in his incarnation as Ram, character. Character. What is your character? There's so many things we do, but what we do is less important than who we are. Of course, what you do is an extension of your character. But character is the basis of life, or it's the basis of our progress in any aspect of life, both material and spiritual. And character is so important because it really establishes one's position in relationship to everything in a proper way. And so Lord Ramachandra taught ideal character. If you compare him with the other incarnations of the Lord, especially when Sri Krishna comes, Krishna doesn't follow the standard Dharma because he is above all of that. And he's acting as the Supreme Lord in all cases. And so sometimes he does things which are, from a material perspective, immoral. But they're not. They just look like that. And just like for he marries 16,000 wives. So that looks quite immoral. But for God it's not, because God is the source of all existence and everything is his energy anyway, so he's never separated from anything. Or he says, when he's on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, He says, I'm not going to fight. But then the situation comes and he fights. So we have this apparent, I use the word with some emphasis, apparent contradiction in his character in following Dharma. Truthfulness and what we say, chastity, are somewhat stretched in their definition with Krishna, but not with Ram. Ram's different. He's called Mayada Purusha, Purushottam. It means that he is ideal in every aspect of life. And he acts like the perfect human being, but he is God, of course. And in his acting, he's teaching what is the standard of morality, civility, spirituality, everything. Just like he says, when he was asked to be approached by one other lady, he was already married, and God usually doesn't turn down these approaches, but in this particular case he did. He said, Ekapatni, only one wife in this incarnation. And he taught the principles of an ideal king, how to rule according to the law books of mankind and according to the principles of proper governance based on material and spiritual principles. Everything was ideal in the character of Ram. When his father asked him to go to the forest and stay there for 14 years, although he was qualified and meant to take the throne, he immediately agreed. Obedience to superiors, one of the qualities of character. He did that. He listened to his father, although it appeared to be quite contrary to the situation. So that's Ram. He's ideal. He's righteous. If you're looking for a word to describe Lord Ram's character, he's personification of righteousness. Everything about him is what we say beyond reproach. No one can criticize. But then he is criticized for something he did that appears to be outside of the standard of proper Kshatriya codes. And I'll tell the story, which will make up the whole class. So, if you can just bear with me, it's quite a long story. We all know at one point when he was in the forest, Sita was captured by Ravana. And now Ram is trying to find out where Sita is. Apparently he has no clue. Acting in the role of a perfect human being, he doesn't know where Sita is. And so now he's trying to find out. He travels to the south, and while he's there in the forest, he meets one personality who approaches him in the disguise of a brahmana, and that person is Hanuman. Hanuman came in the disguise of a brahmin to come to meet Ram and get his darshan, get the shelter of his lotus feet. Finally, after some discussion, Ram reveals why he's where he is. He came to the kingdom of the Varnas. The Varnas are the monkey soldiers that accompanied Ram in his battle. And there were millions of them, literally millions and millions, tens of millions of these monkeys. And they lived in one part of that area of the world that was divided into two sections, the north and the south. It was in the area of Kishkinda. And in the southern part, that was the area where most of the demoniac personalities inhabited. In the northern part were the saintly persons mostly. That's how it was divided. He came to the border of that place where the monkeys were camped out. And then he told his situation. My wife has been captured. I need help to find it. I was sent to the monkey soldiers headed by Sugriva to get some support. He said, Hanuman said, well, I'm actually the minister, chief minister under Sugriva. I will take you to Sugriva. So Sugriva was the powerful monkey king at the time. And then they made a pact, and it was an agreement monkeys were going to help. But then Sugriva also said that I have one particular situation in my life that has become very difficult. Although I'm seen as the head of the monkeys, I have been thrown out of that position by my brother, Bali. So Bali and Sugriva were brothers, close brothers. They did everything together. There was much love between them. Much everything about each other was done for the benefit of each other. They were so close. And Bali was the king of the monkey soldiers. And he was there on the throne. Sugriva was his assistant, but practically they ruled together. So one day, one particular demon, very powerful demon, came into the courtyard where Bali and Sugriva was and challenged Bali to a fight. And Bali immediately took up his club and weapons and responded to the demon. But Sugriva was thinking there might be more demons, so I should accompany my brother, so they both went. When the demon saw that, he realized he was defeated. Two of them. And he wasn't, so he ran to flee for his life. And Bali and Sugriva are chasing him. The demon found this cavern deep into the earth, and he crawled into this huge hole and disappeared. Bali stopped at the hole, turned to Sugriva, said, "You stay here and you guard just in case any other demons come. I'm going to take care of this demon." Okay? So he goes in, and Sugriva's waiting. And one day, things are very silent. There's nothing, no sound coming out of the cavern. 2 days. Finally, on the third day, you hear a tremendous scream, like a death-defying scream. And all of a sudden, it's silent. And then Sugriva is thinking, what's happening? He doesn't know. So he concludes, and he waits to see if Bali comes out, but Bali doesn't come out. So he's thinking Bali must have been killed by the demon. So he made an assumption. He judged without really understanding, but his judgment was based on everything that he could understand by the situation. So he concluded that Bali was killed, and now that demon was going to come out of the cavern. And so he took what he saw, this huge rock, and he rolled it in front of the hole to block the demon from getting out. And then he left and went back to the kingdom and told the other monkeys, "Our leader Bali has been killed." Everyone was very sad. There was a ceremony for mourning the death of Bali. And then they said, "Well, Sugriva, since you are, you know, actually qualified and you are so close to Bali, you should actually be the leader now of the Varnas. You should take the post." So Sugriva thought about it and he decided. Not that he was interested in it, but it seemed like he was the one to do the service. Sometimes we're asked to do service we don't like. But because it's necessity, there's no other option, no one else can do it, it needs to be done, we surrender. So he did. After some time, the situation was actually Bali killed the demon, but now Bali was in that cavern, and when he tried to get out, there was a big rock that was pushed in front of the hole. And he had been fighting with that demon for 3 days, so he was really exhausted. And so he tried to move the rock and he couldn't. He was so tired. So he rested for some time. Then he was thinking, how is this rock getting in front of this hole? No wind could possibly blow that rock. And so he concluded it must have been Sugriva that put the rock there. So he's struggling, straining, fighting. Finally, his energy comes back and he moves the rock, he gets out. He goes back to the kingdom, he sees Sugriva sitting on the throne. His eyes get fiery red with anger. He becomes so angry, he charges after Sugriva, jumps on him and starts beating him. Now, Bali assumed that Sugriva was thinking, well, you know, my brother's dead, now I can be the king. So Bali was thinking, well, you know, the whole thing, he blocked the hole, he used that as an opportunity so he could take the throne. But which wasn't the case. Both of them misunderstood each other. And all of a sudden, that loving relationship, they were so close, they did everything together, so much friendship, so much camaraderie. Now, it changed. And Bali is so angry, he's beating Sugriva. And Sugriva is no match for Bali, so he runs. And Bali's chasing him. And he's thinking, I have to run for my life. And then he really remembers there's one ashram called Matanga Muni's ashram. Many years ago, when Bali was fighting with one demon, he killed the demon, and he threw the body of the demon in Matanga Muni's ashram, and it landed right on his sacrificial fire and destroyed the whole fire. Matanga Muni was so angry with that, and he cursed Bali, saying that if he comes within 4 miles of my ashram, he'll die. So Sugriva remembered that, and then he thought, okay, here's a place I could hide out. So he ran and he got into Matanga Muni's ashram, and Bali couldn't go in there because he knew the curse, that if he went there, he would die by the power of that Brahminical curse. Brahmins could curse in those days. If they curse you to die, that's it. And so now he's there, and Bali goes back, and he's now, Bali is angry at Sugriva, so in order to get more vengeance, he captures Sugriva's wife. Her name was Rumi. He has a wife already, her name is Tara, and now he takes the second wife, Sugriva, his brother's wife, which was a great offense. One of the greatest offenses that one can do is to steal another person's wife. Even if the lady is willing, still don't do it. It's a great offense and it destroys everything. I've seen it happen even in ISKCON, so be careful. I don't think anybody here would do it, but anyway, sometimes we think about that, right? Boy, that lady looks nice, but she belongs to that guy. Ooh, that guy's a rascal. She would be better with me. So, we might think, that's how Bali, but Bali didn't care. So now he ruled the throne, and he stole Ruma, and Sugriva's there. So in this, then we go back. Now, Ram appears, and Ram, he meets Sugriva, and then he tells him his situation. My wife's would also been stolen by this Rakshasa, Ravana. Of course, he didn't know who it was at the time. So he makes an agreement with Sugriva to help find his wife. But Sugriva says, well, I also have this problem. My wife's also been stolen. And I am no longer in power. You know, Bali has taken the throne back. So Ram said, well, what should we do? He said, well, I can't do anything as long as Bali's trying to, you know, kill me. So Ram said, all right, well, why don't you challenge him to a fight, and I'll hide behind this tree with my arrow, and when you're fighting, after some time I'll shoot Bali, and then haribo. And so that was the agreement. You enjoying the story? It's okay? It's not boring? Okay. Just checking. So So Sugriva thought, all right. So he comes out and he starts yelling at Bali, and challenging him to a fight. Bali says, it's Sugriva. He wants to fight. All right, good. So he comes out and leaves his wife, and there's a big fight. And they're fighting, and they look alike. They're brothers, and they're both monkeys. And so Ram's looking, and apparently, he can't tell the difference between the two. So he doesn't know which one to shoot. So he doesn't shoot anybody, because he didn't want to kill Sugriva. But Sugriva's taking a big beating, and then again he runs away and goes back to Matanga's ashram to get safe for Bali. And then after some time he comes out, and he comes back to Ram, and he says, you gave your promise. He almost killed me. I'm barely alive after his beating. Ram said, I couldn't tell the difference between the two of you. In order not to kill you, I didn't shoot anybody. So challenge him again. And this time you wear a red handband, so put a band around your head so I know which one is which. So that was the program. So now he comes out after some time and he challenges Bali again to a fight. Bali's with his wife, Tara. And then he hears the cries of Sugriva, and Bali's all ready to go out and fight again. Tara said, husband, don't go. It's not going to be good. You know, the wife is the better half of the husband. Remember that. So women have this ability to see things that men don't see. And they have this extra sense of perception. They can understand things. And especially when it comes to your wife. So she could understand it's going to be bad for Bali. It's not going to be good. So she tries to dissuade him from going. Doesn't listen. Goes anyway. So he comes out and the fight is there. And they're fighting and fighting and fighting. And again, Sugriva's losing the battle. But this time, Ram takes behind a tree and he shoots his arrow. And he hits Bali right in the chest and knocks him down. And he's almost dead, but he's not. And then Ram walks over to him. And Bali looks at Ram. He's still alive, but he's barely alive. Why did you do that? That was unfair. This is not Kshatriya code. You fought behind a tree. He said, you're a monkey. Besides, you also broke religious principles. And that is you. In other words, if you're dealing with someone who's a cheater, you cheat. Sometimes. So in this case, he had stolen the wife of Sugriva, and that was a great offense. And that same thing happened to Ram, so he didn't spare Bali for that. And Bali is there, and Bali, he's becoming humble now, although he's dying, of course, and he's and then he starts to speak, and then Ram says to him, well, if you think it was unfair that I killed you, then I can give you back your life. I can remove the arrow and you'll be back. Bali said no. He said it would be this opportunity to die at your lotus feet, such a great opportunity. I wouldn't have traded for anything. So he took shelter of the Lord's lotus feet. And Bali had this necklace on. It was a special necklace given by his father, Indra was his father. And as long as he wore that necklace, he couldn't die. So then he starts to speak, and he turns to Sugriva. Sugriva, he said, I'm going to be leaving. So you take care, you rule, and you take care of my son Angada, and my wife also. You make sure you give them everything. And he just poured his heart out in a very humble way. And at one point, he took off that necklace, and as soon as he took it off, he gave it to Ram to give to Sugriva, and then when he had, he left his body. So that's, Ram gets criticized by commentators and others for somewhat fighting unfairly. But Ram explained that, you know, in this case, he was an offender, so he dealt with an offender in a different way. But what is the moral of this story? What is the main point of this story? And this is the essence of this whole thing. It's called judging without understanding. Judging without understanding. Sometimes we see that happens in the world, maybe in our own lives. We make judgments on something, either about a person, about a situation. But we're not, but our judgment may be simply based on what we perceive. But that may not be the entire picture. Just like Balu judged Sugriva that he had planned to take over the kingdom, but that wasn't the truth. He made his judgment without understanding the situation. And because of that, you might say it cost him his life. So judging without understanding, we find that it happens in life. Sometimes someone will tell us about some person, and we believe it, even though we don't have any direct connection with the person or we know the person, but the situation becomes something available to us by someone else's words. And then we accept that. And then many times, because we accept it without knowing the full situation, we misunderstand. Or our judgments are wrong. Or the idea of judgment itself becomes a factor of mistake. Life is like that. Life is like that. Sometimes we judge other persons just by the way they look, or the way they speak, or the way they act, or the way they, or something about them that is something that maybe not is good, but still we make our value judgments. That's one of the dangers of life. And that can lead to great offenses. Just like people judge Ram, or they even judge Krishna, right? Krishna is like, he breaks all kinds of principles. And they think Krishna is not actually God, because God wouldn't do that. So it's another form of judgment. It goes on in the world quite frequently. In fact, it's an everyday affair to judge without understanding. Just like people talk about our movement, right? But they don't know. They hear something from the outside, or some news report, or something, or they make some judgment about some person in the movement that apparently something went wrong, but they don't know the situation, and they conclude. So to stay away from judgments is very difficult, because that's the way the world works, you know. But before you actually conclude on a subject matter or a situation or particularly a person, you should know all the facts before, and otherwise there is a danger. And that danger is it creates a mentality that is opposite of Krishna consciousness. It's a mentality of thinking about others or a situation in a way that is not beneficial, and it might be completely, and usually is, completely wrong. Before you can actually give an opinion about a person, you have to know the person. You really have to know the person personally. So it's better not to judge anybody. That's a hard one, right? Better not to judge anybody. we might sometimes, in a protective way, we make some judgment in order to avoid certain situations. That's normal. But we can't see the whole picture. Just like in the Bhagavatam, there's one verse in the 11th canto. It's 29th chapter, verses 1 and 2 in that chapter, where it says, one should not praise another, and one should not criticize another. Because both criticism and praise is always wrong. Or what you might say, incomplete. That's a better word, incomplete. But then verse number 2 says, you can praise. Because that's what we do in Krishna consciousness. A lot of times we praise devotees and we give them all kinds of glorifications, and it's way beyond their qualities. But it's good for us. It's not good for them. But it's good for us. But when it comes to criticism, that's more dangerous. And therefore one should avoid. Therefore Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu makes this a very emphatic point in his preaching. He says, if you want my full mercy, and he's the Supreme Lord, if you want my full mercy, do two things. One, develop your attraction for an activity in chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to give us the Yuga Dharma, the chanting of the holy name. And that's very attractive to him also. So those who are attracted to chanting actually receive the mercy of the Lord in a very big way, besides the fact that one receives mercy simply by chanting. In other words, Lord Chaitanya is pleased. But he said, if you want my full mercy, he said, do one other thing. Don't find fault with anybody. He called it a dosha darshi. Darshi means see. Dosha means faults. Adarshi means one who doesn't see the faults of others. So, to see the faults of others just destroys one's mentality. Better when you see a fault in another person, just look for their good qualities at the same time. You might say, in general, that people are somewhat balanced. No, maybe not balanced, but people have many good qualities, but there may also be some faults. But the faults don't really matter so much. They don't really matter. So overlook those things and look for the good qualities. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu makes that point. He says, one who criticizes my devotees, they are drinking poison. If they drink poison, they die. And those who praise and glorify the devotees, they're drinking nectar. And then that way they achieve eternal life. So this is Mahaprabhu. So it's very difficult in a general sense to avoid this. But if we practice this very carefully, not finding fault with others, or not prematurely making judgments about things, then we find ourselves that Krishna consciousness becomes very easy and natural. Yeah, because these other things simply cloud the mind and make the mind very much, what we say, in a very inordinate kind. We can't really focus on Krishna. And that's the whole process is to focus your mind on Krishna. Okay, so this is one particular pastime. We'll be here for a few more days speaking other messages. There's many, many powerful and very important messages that Ramayana gives us in the life of Lord Chaitanya. Anyone would like to add anything in the form of questions, comments? Can't say criticisms because I told you not to do that. But if you want, I don't mind. Any questions? Yes, Marcel? Marcel is the beneficiary of everybody here. Because I learned one thing about Slovenia. You all have questions, but everyone's shy to ask. I have studied this very carefully. I know you have questions, but you're also shy. You don't ask. So we have one person that is a little bit different. Okay.
He's now
a Shalaka Rishi. Wow.
He's our
Shalaka Rishi. Oh, well, beautiful. Congratulations. Thank you. I won't forget that name. Go ahead, Rish.
thank you for a starting lecture. I would just like to ask for some advice. If our mind is so conditioned that we commonly find fault even though unjustified, how can we like move away from this tendency? How can we move away from the tendency of finding faults in others?
Just look for the good qualities, that's all. If you see faults, just forget about it. And then, well, one of the good qualities about the devotees is that he's a devotee. That's the outstanding quality. How many people in this world, there are millions, actually have taken up devotional service? So that's a rare quality. To one who actually takes up devotional service is considered the best of all person. Although they may have some other smaller faults, it's not so important. Bhaktisiddhanta gives a very powerful statement. He says, if the faults of others disturb you, look inside yourself and see what about yourself is causing you to become disturbed. Interesting. Yeah, so we can be disturbed or we can somehow or other just let it go and just go on with our Krishna consciousness. Yeah. Yes. Okay, Mataji, Hare Krishna. How are you?
Enlightened after the class.
Good.
Now I'm thinking, taking my question into account, probably not enlightened enough. How does this work on a practical level? If we have to deal with somebody, it's very handy to know what their bad qualities are. Like Srila Prabhupada said, I think he said, if you're inviting a thief, you just hide the jewelry and then invite that person. So from that point of view, it's kind of nice to know, okay, that guy tells me he's coming to help. He'll probably, be late or whatever. So how... Probably the trick is to know but not to judge, right? Take into account but not think it's a bad thing, or how does it work practically?
Well, if you see that there is some difficulty by accepting a certain type of association, then one, you could avoid that if it's possible. Avoid the association.
The person or the situation where the problem arises?
Well, the situation may not be avoidable, but the person can be. It's a little bit easier to avoid the person than the situation. I think it's keeping things... You might have to be a little proactive in keeping things on the right track so things don't gravitate down to something that is unpleasant. Just like sometimes when someone is speaking badly, you just change the subject and speak nicely. Like what really gets a person who is speaking badly, you start speaking good about the same thing he's speaking bad, and he gets all confused. He doesn't know what to do. That's one way. Or if you can get away from the situation by excusing yourself for some emergency reason, that would be good. Because you shouldn't allow people to cause you difficulty. That's an offense to yourself. If you know a situation is going to be difficult, if you can work it out and somehow or other perceive ahead of time that it's worth going through to see if we can come to some, successful or practical or agreeable solution, then do for it, go with it. But if you think the person's impossible, then just avoid it. Because I know there's certain people I can talk to, and although we disagree, we can actually come to some kind of friendly conclusion, even though we still disagree. And there's others, it's impossible, so I don't even bother, you know. just a waste of time. Because, you know, there are people who are argumentative. So a little perception beforehand, knowing a little bit of the history of the person, like that. Another, you can't give this is the way you do it. And you have to really understand the situation and what's there before you actually decide to act or not to act. But always keep things positive, even if you have to say something that is opposed to the person's ideas or agreements. You know, avoid anger, because as soon as anger comes in, it kind of spoils the whole communication. People pick up on the anger rather than the words. So that's what we should avoid. Does that help a little?
It does. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay. Yes, Madhaji. Hare Krishna.
There is another question that often comes up regarding the things that Lord Ramachandra supposedly did not do right. So this is a question regarding his dealings with Mother Sita.
Mm-hmm.
He's sending away Mother Sita. So the question is, as a leader, it was ideal that he sent her away so that he would be without suspicion. But how did he act ideally as a husband by sending her away? How did he protect her as a husband by his act?
You know, it took me years, but I finally found out the real reason why he did it. Which has nothing to do with husband. It's about two demons that he destroyed these two demons by sending her away. That's a whole other story. I can speak about that story in my next class. It's really interesting. Because I've been really challenged, and so many other speakers also have been challenged. It seems like. But he, Sita and Ram can never be separated. Although there's an apparent separation, that was done in order. I'll try to give you a little history of the demons. There was two demons. They were called, what were the name of those demons? I can't remember. But they performed austerities and they got the darshan of Brahma to get a benediction. And they wanted Brahma's benediction that they could get liberation and still act as demons. And they said, the only way we can not get our liberation is that if Sita and Ram are separated. Because they knew that the Lord can never be separated from his internal energy. So the Lord knew that, so he frustrated these two demons by separating her, and then plan to get liberation and still act as demons was destroyed because Brahma gave him that benediction. Mm-hmm. That's the hidden story, but there's much more to it. So that's the reason why he did it. But in another sense, although they were separated physically, they were never separated. They were always together in spirit. That's how it's understood, anyway. Because the Lord cannot be separated from his internal energy. But there's an apparent separation that looks like separation, but it's just there for Leela, that's all. or like that. Does that help a little?
Yes.
I'll tell the whole story in another class. I'm giving class tomorrow night and Tuesday night and also on Wednesday. So, because that's an interesting story. And it needs to be told, too, because there's a lot of misunderstanding about that one. Okay, thank you. Anything else? Okay, on time, yeah. Oh, another question? Oh, okay, yeah. Am I going over time? A little over time, okay. It's okay. No, you continue.
What no explanation that I've heard till now has ever been making sense.
It's in the Shastra. Madhvacharya actually talks about this.
Then I must accept it. But there was one that I've heard that made sense, kind of satisfied the feelings, which I heard from one Swami, but I cannot base it on any Shastra, so maybe you know the basis, or maybe you will say it, I suppose. He said that Lord Ram did it to show that it's wrong to do so. That if Krishna was asked to forsake his mother, or if Nanda Maharaj would be told, forsake Krishna, he would just say, get out of here, no way.
Why would he do something negative to teach from that point of view? It doesn't make sense.
That's why I'm not even giving the name of this Swami, because I don't remember what he based this answer on.
Well, people are looking for some answers because no one has been able to satisfy. I found this one from one devotee who studies the Ramayana. I mean, he really studied it. And he found this, and it's statements by Madhvacharya, so it's coming from that source. So.
Like, it makes perfect sense, but Phil, as a husband, how did he protect her as a husband? I also don't.
Well, he sent her to Valmiki's ashram. And then, of course, what happened later when she was in Valmiki's ashram, she gave birth to two children, Kush and Love. And then later, they started to glorify their father, not knowing who their father was. So, and of course, that was a way to bring her back to the spiritual world. It was accordingly, what they say, it was time for her to leave. So, yeah. But I don't agree with that other statement. This doesn't make sense. Why he would do something wrong to teach from that position. If he's going to teach from that position and do something wrong, he'll say, this is wrong, don't do it. But that wasn't said. Because he'd have to clarify that that's why he did it, but there's no statement like that. Okay, we'll stop here. I think there's some other program that's going on. Oh, was there some awards, some certificates or something? That was all done already? Oh, okay. Well, thank you very much, and prepare yourself and read up about Ram's pastimes. They're really quite instructive and interesting. Thank you. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.